chance to have a dream, to open and run a bakery. But they took a chance, took the sweets to the street. Now they all have places where I'd love to eat.
Hello there, bakeroos and bakerettes. Welcome to the Rise Up Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Dick, and this is the show about bakers and bakeries and bakery owners and all the folks that work so hard, often through the night, to make the good stuff and share it with the people in their community. How are you this week? Great to be talking to you once again. Absolutely it is. Happy Valentine's Day. If you're over it by now, I hope you had a great day at the bakery. I'm recording this on the 15th. So our Valentine's Day at our house was rather mellow. Cindy came home from work, had another meeting after work, and was exhausted from a Monday at work. So we had a couple of chocolates and had some supper, and that was about it for our Valentine's. Although I did try a lot of Valentine-related words in my Wordle on Monday, thinking I had an inside track because I knew what day it was. And I tried heart, and I tried aorta, and I tried blood, and I tried valve, and it was none of those things. It was actually cynic. I think the New York Times, since they bought Wordle, have got a bit of a sense of humor about them picking cynic as the word for Valentine's Day. But yeah, there you go. Hey, today on the show, it's another great baker chat. You know, last week we were down in Panama talking to Brian Winsenreed, and so I figured, well, let's stay with this kind of Southern, Central, South American kind of feel. And today we're talking to Katie Kopczyk from Bolivar Breads in Bolivar, West Virginia. Ha, bit of a misdirection there. Yeah, it's Bolivar Breads, Bolivar, West Virginia, although she's across the line in Harper's Ferry, West Virginia, which sounds like an amazing place. And we talk about that. We talk about a little bit of geographic trivia. We talk about baking. We talk about her bakery. We talk about how her bakery started. All of that stuff in a couple of minutes' time. I'm excited for that. What else is going on? I'm in a really good mood this week because we've had 2 days of brilliant sunshine here on the southern tip of Vancouver Island. Saturday and Sunday was glorious, and Saturday especially. You know, Cindy and I went out for a walk, and a long walk. We were gone like 6.5 hours. Yeah, okay. Part of it was to avoid all of the yahoos hooting and tooting at the protest that was going to go on a block over from our apartment, and a lot of it was because it was a brilliant sunny day, and we did a bit of an abnormal thing for us as we actually picked a route ahead of time, so that we could find some bakeries to stop at for foodstuffs along the way. This is not normal for Mark and Cindy go on a walk. Like, there's always bakeries involved, don't get me wrong, but we don't often plan it that well. And so usually what happens, we set out full of optimism, you know, 10 in the morning, and we start heading towards the water. Maybe we'll take a bus further away and find our way home. And somewhere around 2 p.m, we are lost sometimes, often. We've made a wrong turn. We are much further away from the lunch place than we thought. We're usually hot and sweaty. We're quite a distance from a bus stop, and we're hungry and out of water. And this time, it wasn't like that at all. We went straight from our apartment straight to Deer and Doe Bakery, which is this fun little place just to the east of us. Picked up supplies, filled the backpack up with cake. I had a croissant in my hand, you know, for emergency purposes. And we continued on and started checking out some beaches and little bays and inlets that are around the southern tip of the island here. And so, you know, walked past Ross Bay and sat for a bit at Gonzales Bay, and then went over between Gonzales and McNeil Bay as this little point that we hadn't been on before. This little flat part of land, and there's a Chinese cemetery there, which was really interesting and quite an amazing place. There was a sign where they described why they chose that spot for the cemetery, and there was a lot of feng shui involved, and it made a lot of sense once we read about it, why that was such a tranquil spot, and a rocky sort of point beside there that we could, you know, sit out on a bench and eat our piece of cake and and look at the ships going, you know, through the channel and stuff, and look at the mountains in Washington State across the way. And that was pretty awesome. And then, you know, because we were there, there's a fairly hefty climb sort of straight up behind us from where we were sitting to this lookout that you can look out over the city of Victoria and over the water and the mountains beyond in all four directions. It's really amazing. And when we looked off to the northeast, so there's this mountain called Mount Baker that's in Washington State, and it's a long ways away from where I am, you know, even as the crow flies. And it's always covered in snow, and it sort of stands out on its own. And most days, there's clouds covering part or all of that mountain. And on Saturday, it was just brilliant blue skies, this bright white mountain. And you could see all the little baby mountains alongside. I think it's called the Rainier Range. I'm not 100% sure. And they were all just gleaming white in the sunshine as well. And you never really see that much wide open, clear skies all at the same time. And so it was spectacular. So we hung out there for a while and then climbed down and went to our second bakery of the day, which is actually a little cafe catering place bakery called Delish, which I think is my favorite place in Victoria for a Saturday early afternoon kind of brunch and luncheon with extra sweets on the side kind of place. And so we loaded up there. You know, I had a sandwich, Cindy had a quiche. It was delicious. You know, had some more treats and then started meandering home and stopped back at Deer and Doe to pick up some chocolate cake for dessert for that evening. So there, I can't think of a better Saturday. You know, if you're not actually baking for other people, if you're allowed to get outside, to go out in the sunshine and make three different stops at bakeries and see some nature and climb some rocks and avoid the horn honking yahoos, it's a good day. So we had a lot of fun. And it was almost as much fun as the chat that I had a few nights before with Katie Kopsick. This was a risky call. I'll set it up right now. It's a bit of a risky call because I reached out to Katie, and this is another friends of friends call. Katie is a friend of John Gerlach, who was on the show last year, and John said you should talk to Katie. She's awesome, and she is. And so I reached out to Katie, and she said, "Great, let's talk. How about 7:30 p.m. her time on Friday night?" And I'm like, "Whoa, okay. Is that what you want to do? Because, you know, I know you have a busy day the next day." And she was like, no, it's good. We'll talk, and then I'll go to bed." And so we did. We had a really fun talk. Like I say, I was a little nervous at the start because the last thing you want to do is bore a baker on Friday night when they really could be sleeping. But no, we had a fun talk. I learned a bit about how in the heck do you name a town Bolivar when you're in West Virginia. We learned a bit about that. We talk about the Appalachian Trail a little bit, and we talk a lot about Katie's Bakery and how it came about and what it's like right now. So let's get started. Let's get into this. It's Katie Kopsick from Bolivar Breads in Harpers Ferry, West Virginia. It's getting late for you.
It is. It's 7:30.
Oh my gosh. How does that fit into your weekend now?
I'm going to go to bed after this. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Cause you're, you got a big day tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah. We're coming up on Saturday. It's usually pretty busy. I mean, this is a slow time of year. But I don't really know what a slow time is cause it's our first year being open. So, we're kind of figuring it out as we go. It's been good. It's been good so far. So
you're in Harpers Ferry?
Yeah. Harpers Ferry, West Virginia, which is right at the corner of where Harpers Ferry, Maryland, and Virginia all come together. There's two rivers that come together and we're like right at the point there. And so we're about an hour outside of DC. So kind of East Coast, but in the mountains, more in the mountains.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's neat. I've talked to a couple of folks in that sort of DC area.
Yeah.
But the geography is weird because it's that weird kind of convergence. I was looking it up and it's like, it's all sort of twisted and you're north of where I thought and west of where I thought.
more north than Northern Virginia, but like we're kind of like over it, like we're kind of like a hump over Virginia. And yeah, so it's a cool place to live. We moved here about 8 years ago and really love it. So
Where's hometown for you?
So I grew up in Fairfax, Virginia, which is a little bit closer to DC and more like suburbs.
Oh, okay.
And kind of went a bunch of places in between there, but we've kind of made our home in Harpers Ferry, where it's still kind of close to family, but more in the mountains and you know, it's
yeah. Really nice. Yeah. Looks beautiful with the two Thank rivers you. And stuff. And
yeah.
Yeah. And is it kind of like a tourist town or is it like a bedroom community, or how does that work?
Where we are is definitely has a tourist aspect to it during the season. Spring, summer, and fall is very busy because we're right in the middle of the Appalachian Trail. So,
oh, cool.
It goes like Georgia to Maine, and we're the unofficial midpoint of it. So the Conservancy is here right up the block. So we get a lot of people who visit from here.
That's where I've heard the name before. I was racking my brains when I was thinking about that, but I've read Bill Bryson's book, A Walk in the Woods, several times. Right. And, and yeah, that's the midpoint.
That's
yeah. Okay. Oh, how cool is that?
Yeah. So we get a lot of people passing through, and a lot of people who come here to start the trail, they're just doing it halfway, or they'll start halfway and then do the other half. And then it is just a beautiful town in the mountains. So a lot of people come here from DC, from Baltimore, from Pennsylvania, just to kind of spend long weekends here and go hiking. There's a lot of great hiking out here. So
kind of that get out of the city, and that's where I'm going to go.
Exactly. And it's not too far, but it's like worlds away from the city and the suburbs. So, yeah.
Well, and your bakery's fairly new, but you're kind of not new to the industry anyways.
No, I'm not new to the industry. I've been baking since I was 15. My first job was in a bakery, and I've never really done anything else. So I started out doing cakes and kind of specialty cakes. I went to culinary school at the Culinary Institute of America up in Hyde Park, and I got my degree from there. And then from there, I kind of went fine dining for a while. I did mostly pastry fine dining for a couple of years and knew some bread, but it was something I liked, but didn't love. When I went up, I was working up in New York City at Per Se, which also shared a kitchen with Bouchon Bakery. And so the bread bakers did both, and they couldn't find a night baker. So I was kind of working lunch at the time. And I was like, well, I'm not great at it, but if you would be willing to teach me, I'm happy to work nights. and just kind of fell in love with it. It was a totally different world for me. And the people who do it are just so cool. Like, everyone's got a story on how they ended up on the night shift. And I just loved it. I fell in love with the work, and I fell in love with the people. And then in 2008, the economy crashed. So we kind of went home from New York, and I went into catering and did that for 7 years. I was doing a lot of wedding cakes, banquets, things of that nature. And, you know, kind of did bread somewhat, you know, we did like sit down dinners, and I would make the bread for it, but it wasn't a full-time thing, but I always kind of like loved it. Like, it was always kind of that thing that was like my special time of the day, was when I got to, you know, make the focaccia or shape the baguettes or whatever. Like that was the part I look forward to the most. You can do like 10 wedding cakes, but then it's like, oh, but I got to make rolls. So that was the part.
So you're kind of trying to influence the menu selections and stuff. Give me something fun.
Definitely. And yeah, so just kind of worked around from there. And I was working for a farm they had like a grocery store and a restaurant that was kind of more casual and making their pastries. And then COVID happened. So obviously everything kind of shut down, and you know, pastry people and restaurant people in general are used to being very busy. They're used to multitasking, and all of a sudden you can't do anything.
Yeah.
So I kind of like sat around for 2 days and was like, okay, well, you know, well, let's do something.
That was kind of it, eh? two days and that's enough.
Yeah. And I was like, that's enough. We've had a weekend. I'm done. Like, let's get back to work. So yeah, I was actually, it's kind of crazy how it all worked out because I was trying to transition out of the production kitchen and into more of an educational setting. I wanted to be a culinary school teacher. I wanted to teach people because I had done it for so long and the kind of one of the things that I loved the most was teaching new people how to do a task and watch them kind of like get it and succeed at it. And I wanted to do more of that. So I had taken a job as a cooking school teacher and I was supposed to start the day everything shut down.
Oh, really?
So they called me like the night before and they were like, hey, I don't know if this is going to work. We'll call you in a couple of weeks and we'll see. And I was like, oh, okay. I'll just bake some bread for a while and till everything gets back to normal. And a coffee shop kind of, they contacted me. They knew because it was my favorite coffee shop. They knew like what I did for a living and that I wasn't doing anything. So they said, well, why don't you just make a couple loaves of bread and we'll sell it. And it sold out right away. We sold the first loaf out of the trunk of my car. And people were so desperate for bread. There was no food on the shelf. Then I was like, okay, well, I'm going to go home and I'm going to bake some more. Like, and when I realized it was going to be like, okay, well, now I need to make more than six loaves of bread. I'm going to need a mixer. I'm going to need like some actual flour. So I called up my friend who used to have a bakery that she did for farmers markets for croissants. And I was like, hey, are you using your mixer, your 20 quart Hobart? And she's like, no, you want it? And I was like, yeah, can I borrow it? And she's like, sure. And I still have it like 2 years later. So we just started it with a mixer and a 50 pound bag of flour that I found at my old job. And it just kind of like every little bit that we did, kind of I just kept putting back into the business and back into the business to kind of grow it. But it was all done out of my house for the first 8-9 months, I think, before I was able to find a commercial kitchen that kind of suited what we needed it to be. And
maybe in a few years' time, we're going to talk about, you know, February and March 2020, like just call, say 2008. And it means something to everybody, right? You know, like the economy crashed and that's it, you know, and boy, the number of stories that I've heard of that. Well, even in our own experience, you know, my wife finished a 2 week training program. And then it was like to work at a school and then, okay, it's going to be spring break for 2 weeks. And then we'll see you at the end of March, you know?
Oh, goodness.
And, you know, when we went on spring break, it was sort of like, you know, I wonder how this is going to go because it was in that weird time, right?
Yeah, like nobody kind of knew how it was going to shake out or
thing. And like for her, that end of March was turned into the end of May. And then we kind of go in ever since, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, folks that had just opened or were about to open or were in the middle of building out. And well, it makes sense that at any point in time, there's all kinds of things in progress, but it just seems like the number of people that had a plan, like things were happening and then it just stopped dead. And it's like, okay, teaching's not a thing for the foreseeable future. I got to do something.
You can't do nothing. And I feel like this whole, like you said, like the February, March, 2020, like it's full of these kinds of stories where people just are making the best of, you know, what they have available and trying to find a new path, because if you can't, I don't know, like you put all these plans in motion and then, you know, like you said, like you're building out a space or you're, you know, you've taken on a lease or you've bought equipment and then like all of a sudden there's no customers and it's a real strange place to be in. I feel really fortunate that we were able to start so small and people were, well, they were baking their own bread. So they knew one, how good it is and two, how hard it was. So.
Yeah.
So they got to value good bread and get a taste for it. But then as life started to kind of pick back up again, I gave a lot of thought to what is this going to be after life goes back to quote normal?
Right. Yeah.
And are people still going to want what I'm selling? But they do because they've fallen in love with it over because they've made it and they've, you know, had it this whole time. So,
yeah. It never occurred to me before, but maybe it would have taken a long time. It would have been a period of transition to get people away from good bread to like supermarket store stuff.
Yeah.
And I think once you've had the good stuff again, you're not,
you're not, you know, dreaming of the day where I can go back to just buying, you know, Wonder Bread or Dempster's or something, right? It's sort of like, now that I've got it, it's like, I want to keep doing it. You're, I want to keep having access to it. Was this the first time, like, with that, that you were going to serve folks like directly in Harper's Ferry, like with some of the other jobs, was it more further afield for you?
It was. So West Virginia is about 45 minutes from like the more affluent Northern Virginia and kind of Maryland areas. And so that's kind of where I've always worked, because that's where the fine dining has been.
Right. Yeah.
So I've always done this commute, and I feel like I've never really fully been a part of this community. And there's a lot of really cool people here, and they're just, I don't know. They were so welcoming of, you know, what I was trying to do and what I was trying to put out into the world at this crazy time of our lives. And like, they put up with me having a terrible website and me, like, you know, taking days off or only baking on Tuesdays, or like, everyone was just, whatever I was doing, they were down for it. And it was just, it was so amazing to be like, so welcomed into this community and getting to know the people that are right here in our backyard and right here in our neighborhood, instead of, you know, people who are an hour away.
Yeah.
And then you come home and you go to bed and you wake up and you commute and do it all over again. So I'm so thankful that I'm able to be here. My commute is 4 minutes. You know, I live on the same street that I work on. Like,
That's so cool.
Yeah. So it's awesome. Yeah.
Well, because like, I think that the folks that you're baking for, in my own experience anyways, they appreciate the connection as well. It's like, I know Katie, she's my baker. There we go. And so it's like, you know, well, yeah, I get my bread from an actual human. She's going to have some days off, you know, she's going to do some, you know, yeah, if she's going traveling, that's going to happen. Right. It's like, that's kind of the thing.
That's the thing. And I'm sure you had a similar experience. It kind of sounds like your bakery, Orange Boot, was similar to mine in the sense it's like a neighborhood bakery. It's about the same size. Mine is 1200 square feet.
Yep.
You know, you focus on bread. This is just kind of what I've seen from what you were doing.
Well, it was. I think when we opened up the retail bakery, well, because I'd done a stint of baking out of the backyard and for just people that I knew, and then we opened the retail bakery, and there was a little bit of growing pains where it was just sort of, you throw open the doors and you invite everyone in.
Yeah.
I almost needed like a year to kind of rebuild the new connections, because there was a whole new group of regulars that weren't from the backyard. There was the backyard folks plus all these.
Yeah. Like the original folks and then the new original folks. Yeah.
And then there was the very early original folks from the retail place. And then once we kind of found that crew, then it was like, okay, you know, especially on Saturdays, like one of the weird things about the retail bit during the week was I'd be up, like we'd be going home around noon and, you know, you're still open till six. And so you didn't see a lot of the customers that came afternoon kind of thing, except on the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
But then I really noticed that when we came back to the backyard after we closed the retail bakery, that then it was like, I was baking to the rhythms of, you know, our family life and stuff as well. It's like, oh, summer vacation time. We're going to do summer vacation.
Yeah. It's a totally different rhythm.
Yeah. What I'm kind of seeing is folks with retail spaces now and smaller spaces, not being as hung up on projecting this, we're always open. You know, you know, we don't talk about the need for a break or that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like I felt guilty the first time we closed right after Easter. You know, instead of like we're spent, we need some time.
That's exactly it. Like, I mean, Thanksgiving. So we opened our doors the middle of October. So right in the middle of fall, which is a huge leaf season here. All the leaves are changing. Everyone's going hiking. It's beautiful out. So we opened up and we were just like, we're here. And we're immediately busy. And then right after that, we went into Thanksgiving and we were down a person because he had some, you know, he had some health problems. And so we were like, I called in all my friends who I knew from my baking days and being like, hey, do you want to be a baker for a day? Like, you know, they push paper around now, but they, you know, it never leaves you, that baking. And they're happy to come in and bake with us. But I mean, it was an ordeal to get us through Thanksgiving, and we closed the day afterwards. And Yeah, like people were like, oh, I came by the day after Thanksgiving. You weren't there. And I was like, yeah, we weren't doing anything the day after Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
You know, we pushed over 500 loaves of bread out the door the day before Thanksgiving. Like we're done. We're taking a break and that's it. But I think people, and I hope for you too, people understand that you need some time. Yeah. And I always worried, well, if I take time off, you know, if I take a week off to go up to Vermont and take a class at King Arthur, or if I take some time off to go, you know, it's usually visiting other bakeries that I do on my time off.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
Yeah. But you always worry, like, you know, oh, are they going to stick with me? Are they going to get their bread somewhere else? But they always miss you. And I miss them. Like, I miss baking for them. Also, I come back and I'm just so ready to get back to baking and get back into that rhythm you were talking about of, you know, just kind of like the day to day and, you know, getting back on everyone's schedules again. Yeah. So it is good to get away, but it is really good to be here too.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. Well, and so you were baking out of your house for a while, upgrading as you can.
Upgrading as you can. Yeah.
And so when did you make the shift to the actual bakery? Was it like just last October?
No. So we actually had a kind of intermediary between then. So we moved out of the house and was able to move into like a small, there was a general store in town that wasn't used in their kitchen. They had a different kind of restaurant concept, and it was kind of based off of kind of short order stuff, and they didn't need this kitchen. So I kind of made a deal with them that I would provide all the bread for their sandwich program and pay for utilities, and I could use the space. And
oh, that's nice.
I kind of ran, because at that point I was doing deliveries to homes, but I had like four or five wholesale customers at that time too. So I was able to kind of service everybody out of that space. It was small, it was about 150 square feet. So we fit a lot into that space. Yeah, it was one convection oven. I had eight Dutch ovens I was baking in. I know you've heard the story 100 times. I ordered my Rofco 9 months prior and it still didn't come in.
Right.
So I was waiting on my Rofco. We're still baking everything in Dutch ovens and just kind of like all day long slinging bread out of that tiny place. And did that for about 9 months. And then when the place I'm in now came available, there was a restaurant in there prior, and they moved to expand, because it is kind of a small space. They moved up to Delaware to expand. And so we were able to get that place, which is just amazing. So we built it out for about 2 months. Kind of didn't change a whole lot, just kind of put some surface stuff on it and turned it from a restaurant to a bakery. And open our doors in mid-October. So there has been, this is kind of like our third iteration of Bolivar Bread. And the first two were actually in Bolivar. So Bolivar and Harper's Ferry are right next to each other. We're like neighbor towns.
Okay.
And so I am now one block outside of Bolivar, so technically I'm in Harper's Ferry, whereas the other two were actually in Bolivar. But Bolivar is the name of the town it started, so that's what we're keeping as the name of the bakery.
Well, and it sounds like a small enough town that people are going to mention it too.
Yeah, like, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, they let me know.
Well, at least it's for good reasons. You know, a lot of, in my old town, a lot of the neighborhoods have been reconfigured, and a lot of the retail spaces went away as that went more big box. So you'll get like, you know, the Sherwood Park Veterinary Center is nowhere near Sherwood Park ever was, right? Like it's like far into town, you know, but
that's maybe where they started.
Yeah. Or like the Stapleford Clinic used to be on Stapleford Street. Now it's, you know, way the heck over here, but this is a little different. Well, and I'm so glad you mentioned that, because I'm such a fool. I was thinking, oh, Bolivar, you must have like a South American connection and that kind of thing. And I'll cross that off.
I get this question a lot. Yeah. So it is actually, we have a statue of Simon Bolivar.
Oh, do you?
We do. Okay. Yeah. We are named for him. Cause the town used to be called Mudfort. And then I'm not entirely sure why or when. I believe it was in the 50s, but I'm sure somebody who's listening to this is going to correct me.
Yeah.
The town voted to name themselves Bolivar. So we named ourselves after.
That's fascinating. Bolivar.
Yeah.
Wow.
I have not been able to get a straight answer on why. So if anyone out there knows, I would love to know, because I get this question a lot.
Oh, Let's put it out there and see what comes up. That's so cool. That's hilarious.
There's a couple other towns. I think there's one in Ohio and there's one in Maryland also called Bolivar or Bolivar. I don't know how they pronounce it. We pronounce it Bolivar. Yeah. So
interesting. Okay. Well, that's a rabbit hole for this weekend for me. I'll go start digging into the.
Yeah, please let me know if any of your listeners. Yeah.
Lineage of town names. I'll send you a note. Yeah. Ah, so cool. Well, and then I saw that your Rothko arrived.
It did. And it has been a game changer. Yeah. Yeah. We can do 12 loaves at a time now. So yay.
I cannot imagine like folks like you that said, well, I'm going to do quantities of bread by rotating Dutch ovens and stuff. Mm-hmm. That's some dedication right there.
And it starts out small. It starts out with two, you know, you start out with two and then you're like, maybe I can fit three. And then you get another one. And then you're like, oh, I got another rack in my oven. Maybe if I switch them around halfway, I can get five. So I got five Dutch ovens in my home oven, which is just like a normal home oven. There are some incredible people out there doing like open baking on steel in home ovens and getting just amazing results out of it. My oven, I can't turn off the fan. So it just, all the steam goes away. So we were stuck with Dutch ovens. And yeah. Then we got to the big oven and I could get eight. So like every time it's like, I kind of grew as the need grew. And now I think we're in a good place. I've been waffling on whether or not to get on the wait list for a new one for the new Rothko, knowing it will be another, 9 months to a year.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, we're pumping it out pretty good right now, 12 loaves at a time. We can put out on busy days between that. And then I have a double deck convection oven that we bake all of our pan loaves in and buns and rolls and things like that. But between those two, I can put out about 200 loaves a day.
Wow.
Which is, I think, pushing it. But the cool thing about where we are in our space is that like we get in at 5 a.m. and we do like the pastry bake and then we start baking off all the sourdoughs and everything. And so at any given time when you walk in during the day, we're open 8 to 4. There's going to be some hot bread on the shelves because we're just baking all day long. And I just think that's really cool that you can always kind of come in. We may not always have the loaf you're looking for, but there's always going to be something new that you can try instead. And I love that. I just love that it's kind of like people never know what they're going to find when they come in.
Well, there's appeal for that, you know, and that's one thing that we didn't have on the go at our place because, you know, if there was something in the oven in the afternoon when you came in, mm-hmm. you know, Jen was, you know, roasting garlic for tomorrow or, you know, we were using the oven, but we weren't baking product out of it.
Yeah.
And the number of times I could have sold whatever was in there.
Yeah.
Like it was just like,
I want to know like what just came out of the
what's
oven.
In there and can I buy it? Yeah. We'd have like roasted potatoes that we're going to put in the bread the next day. And I was such a fool. I could have just done roasted potatoes all Friday afternoon and packaged them up.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Especially at, 4 o'clock on a Friday afternoon or something. Uh-huh. Everyone coming in, they're just looking for supper. Right. And that's,
absolutely. Yeah. And if I could get a nice roasted potato, I would go for it.
But even like the big corporate guys are, they sell, I had a Miele deck oven, like mm-hmm. one of the German deck ovens, but they sell a very small one with a fancy front on it. That's mm-hmm. made for like a grocery store, that kind of thing. So it looks like, and it's made for more of a bake-off kind of an operation.
All day long thing. Yeah.
Like, I think that's how it's marketed, but it's, mm-hmm. but there is an appeal there. Yeah. There is an appeal even to come in and say, well, okay, this isn't like, it's not like thaw and bake stuff that you're making the real deal.
No,
but
we're making the real
deal. Like, but it's like, but here's what came out just now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Put it in the basket and watch them go. Like, that's cool.
I feel like there isn't a whole lot. There's starting to be more, but there really isn't a whole lot between I'm baking in Dutch ovens and I have a $20,000 deck oven.
Yeah.
Like as somebody who's like a small producer, there's a couple more of them now, but at the time I was looking, it was kind of only the Rothko.
Yeah.
The Rothko, and now there's the Nero and Campbell from the UK put out a really cool, the Rackmaster 2020 oven, which is amazing. But we can't get it over here yet. And they all have huge lead times. So it's like, how do you bake when you're a small producer? Yeah. So it's a weird place to be in. We're kind of like, we're busy and we're bigger, but we're not a home baker, but we're also not a big bakery. We're kind of small by design.
Well, sure. Yeah. Yeah. And you're exactly right. Like, 20 grand or 30 grand for an oven there's an implication there of a certain amount of quantity to pay that off, right? Like that's
I talked to a friend of mine who has a bakery in the UK, and he had put in a, I think a 3 or 4 deck oven. And he's like, we need to sell 1,000 loaves a day to break even.
Wow.
Like, that's a lot. That's a lot of bread. But I mean, they're doing amazing work there too. It's just our market where we are. That's not the market I want to be in, I don't think. I like being the small neighborhood thing.
Well, and you know, I met a fella that lived near the where they make the Rothko's, and he said, I can introduce you to the guy. We'll get him on the show and stuff. And
why is it taking so long?
I want to do this, although I don't, in my mind, it's like, well, I don't want to take him away from building someone an oven even for an hour because he's busy. But you know, when I was starting and we were going to small bakeries and trying to learn how they were doing it, you know, the only way that it seemed like the only way to do it was you had a pizza oven and a spray, like a hose for steam, and you did your best and you tried not to like break the oven by spraying the water in. Yeah. And that was all there was, right? And so even with the lead times to have access to this, like it's only been 2 or 3 years since I even knew they existed. And now like it, you just see like an entire wave of new bakeries being created because there was that sort of size and price point that folks could make the leap, you know. That's really cool.
And not every space, there's a lot of bakeries and like small kind of historic buildings. We have a historic building that can't really take on a big oven like that, a big oven like yours. There's a place that comes to mind in the UK called Mini Miss Bread, and they have 3 Rothko's. Wow. And they're in a super small, long space, but they're putting out amazing bread out of those 3 Rothko's. And like, I don't know, like I'm inspired by it and I'm just like, wow, like maybe I should get 3 Rothko's, but you know, they're in a place a little bit more foot traffic than we have. So,
Yeah. I'm kind of thinking you could probably just order it and there'd be somewhere to put it by the time it arrived.
Yeah, by the time we arrived it. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, for a big oven like that, I don't know if that's going to be, I don't know. I mean, it'd be cool, but I don't know if that's in the cards for us right now, the big one.
Well, you buy kind of what you know, right? And you know, since I bought the oven that we bought for the bakery, you know, I've seen so many there were smaller ones I could have got. You know, you can mix and match and find these days more what you need that fits. Well, even like a double stack convection ovens, which I didn't have a convection oven at our place, but I've seen what folks can do, you know, with one of those too. Like you can do a lot of pastries.
You can do a lot of
super fast too. So that's a nice combination, you know?
Yeah. It's a little bit of both, you know, not everything needs a hearth. So we use the things that, you know, that benefit from the hearth that are like the big crusty loaves. And we do those in the Rothko, and you do have to steam it and you do have to shuffle it. And it's got some idiosyncrasies to it, but you learn it and it just becomes kind of like part of the deal. And then everything else goes in the, like all of our pastries and stuff just go in the convection. And it's, so it's a good mix. I think it gives us a little bit more flexibility to do more stuff. Not just be shoehorned into, you know, crunchy bread. Cause while I love crunchy bread, it's not everyone's bag. And I understand that.
Oh yeah. You know, when I had some advice really early on from a friend of mine that was like, you can make pan breads, just make really good pan breads.
Yeah.
You know, like, and if that's what your customers like, you can make really good ones, you know?
Exactly. You know, there's nothing wrong with a good pan loaf, and, you know, kids love sandwiches. People love morning toast. Like it doesn't all have to be, you know, a big high hydration, open crumb, you know, this and that. Like it can just be a really good white loaf of bread, and it's a standout. You know, we sell a ton of white bread.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. It's familiar to people. Yeah.
And so you'd mentioned sort of being down a person and having to go to the, you know, go to the offices and start recruiting, press ganging some folks in. But
yeah.
So what's your team looking like these days?
So we've got a really awesome team, and most of them are all very new, which is great because you can kind of teach them. They're enthusiastic and they're willing to learn, and you can teach them how you want it done. And one of the biggest hangups that I had when I was starting, when I was trying to transition from a one-person bakery, which is a heavy load to carry, to be responsible for every aspect of the business, from sourcing all the ingredients to getting it out the door and getting it to people. There's a lot of pieces and parts. You know, anybody who has a bakery or has ever, you know, baked professionally knows that. So I had a lot of hangups about what is the team going to look like. And how am I going to take all this stuff that's always swimming around in my head, all of these moving parts, and get everyone else on board to be able to see what needs to be done at different times of the day and do it. And so our team right now, we have an intern from the Culinary Institute of America who is relatively new. He's been here with us about 3 weeks and he's great. We have my neighbor, who's Abigail, who is an artist, but she has an incredible, she has like home baking experience, but not professional baking experience. And she's really grown into the role amazingly. She's become an excellent baker. And then we have our Jen, who has a cottage business of her own doing cupcakes. And then in her free time, because we have so much free time, she works with us. And then we have another intern. So he's here a couple of days a week. And that's it. So it's like four people. It's small, but it's mighty. And we're, we're kind of rocking it out. I'm the one that's there all the time. And then after that, you know, everybody kind of has their own schedules and works it into their lives the way that they can. So I think we have a really good team right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And everyone has really kind of learned. It's a lot to learn and they've learned it all incredibly. So, yeah. Oh,
that's so neat. Well, by taking over a restaurant, like, do you have seating as well now?
Right now we don't. There's still about 500 square feet of the building that we're not using. And my goal for that space is to turn it into an educational space. So I don't want to give up on that dream of teaching. And, you know, this has kind of been, you know, the bakery has been wonderful. And what I get so many people asking questions about how to bake bread and I would love to just have like a place that we can not only do bread baking classes, but also cooking classes, art classes, you know, like a community learning space, I feel like is a huge draw for where we are. And that's kind of what I want to build here. That's something that's going to like enrich our community like that.
Oh, yeah. That's so cool. And even to go beyond food and that, like you were saying, like what a great thing for the community. Like I miss the local art center, you know, in my old town. Well, and even a friend of mine had a coffee shop lunch place catering and that, and then took over the building, had a basement. She put in a teaching kitchen and was doing like parties and stuff.
That's exactly it.
The schoolhouse thing, right? And got it picked up so they could serve wine and beer, and then they could do like a little office team party, or I taught a couple bread classes there, you know, and you set it up like home kitchen, mm-hmm. you know, with home kitchen gear, but you're gonna teach everyone how to make the good stuff. Like, that's awesome. Yeah.
You don't want to teach them on stuff that they don't have access to at home. And so you want to make sure that it's approachable to them and they can go home and replicate the same thing. Like, I don't want to teach them how to bake bread in the Rofco because they don't have a Rofco. So we're going to teach them how to bake bread in a Dutch oven because that's what they're going to have. And yeah, that's exactly it. So that's right now the space is kind of unused. I am a little nervous with, you know, these new waves and things coming about having gatherings, but I'm starting to gather equipment and we're starting, you know, I ordered tables for it. We're getting butcher block tops on them. And we're just going to kind of do it slowly. And when it's the right time, that's when we're going to do it.
Sure. So, sure. Yeah. And you know, if you can take your time with it, then so much the better, right? Yeah,
exactly.
You're getting a bit of the teaching in with the interns coming through as well. And I'm curious how's that, you know, when it's your place and you've got the sort of hustle and bustle of trying to get everything out the door, mm-hmm. saying, you know, from a model, we're going to have interns sort of by design.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I feel like it just kind of goes back to that teaching thing. And I feel like you've taught classes, like you learn so much by teaching someone as a person. And I feel like there's plenty of ways to do things, and having people with different backgrounds and different perspectives on things can only enrich your business and find new ways and more efficient ways to do things. So I think it's really fun to teach them, and they're so eager to learn. And like, we move them around. It's a very small place, but we move them around to like different parts of the kitchen. So one of them now is doing the morning bake with me at 5 a.m. And so like, that's a totally different dynamic than the person who comes in at noon and starts making pastries for the next day. It's fun because they get to move around. And so everybody, it kind of helps everybody be cross-trained.
I'm curious about sort of two things about sort of the range is like, are you still doing like wholesale plus pickup plus just walk up kind of thing?
Yeah. So we have expanded our wholesale. We have like four or five restaurants now that we make bread for, and then two coffee shops and a farm market that we service with bread every week. And so when we're closed on Mondays and Tuesdays, we're in there baking for them. And so we're still kind of, we're still there, but we're just not open. And then Wednesday through Sunday, we're open for walk-ups and stuff. We don't do pre-orders because, you know, like I was kind of saying earlier, everything kind of comes out of the oven at different times. And so, you know, when you come in, there will always be something cool, and just come in and try something new if we don't have what you want. So we're open to the public 5 days a week, and then we still do our wholesale for 2 days. So it's a really good mix, and it keeps us on our toes for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And from a product perspective, like what's the range of what you're putting out? Because you've got capacity for pastries and bread.
We do, yeah. So we only wholesale our bread. We don't wholesale any.
Gotcha.
I maybe someday, but right now we're just keeping up with what walk-up people are doing. And I just don't want to overextend too early. I feel like we've grown at a really small, sustainable pace, and I want to keep that going, and I don't want to be overwhelmed. So we're just wholesaling our bread. I think we were looking at we've got about 13 different types of bread, but a lot of them are breads that kind of have the same base recipe. So we make a big batch of our sourdough, and then we split it off, and we make Kalamata olive, and we make the cinnamon raisin and chocolate cherry. And so from a mixing standpoint, it's a lot more streamlined, and that's kind of been a game changer for us to kind of do one big mix in a big mixer and then split it off into tubs. So we're able to offer either 11 or 13 different kinds of bread. And then we're doing cookies and brownies and kind of simple pastries that are approachable and nothing too fancy. We try and switch it up, but then keep like the mainstays. Like we do a brown butter sourdough chocolate chip cookie. That's like our number one seller. And then cinnamon buns, of course. So many cinnamon buns.
Is that sort of the local must have?
Yeah, it's like the thing that you come and get one, and then you're like, oh yeah, okay, I get it. I'm gonna come back for these. So yeah, that's the thing that most of the locals come in for.
Gotcha.
And it's like you were saying, a different feel during the week than it is on the weekends. You know, during the week it's locals and people who kind of seek you out. And then on the weekends, it's people who kind of happen upon you because they're visiting the area and they just Googled bakeries in the area. And so having stuff that's going to make both types of people engaged and happy and wanting to come back for more is kind of what we're trying to do.
Well, because honest to goodness, there's nothing better for day hikes than cinnamon buns. Like that's
cinnamon buns and granola. Yeah.
Let the through hikers worry about gorp and stuff. You just come... I'm going to get a couple cinnamon buns. I got my bottle of water. Let's
go. Get a baguette pack and just pull off pieces when you're done. Yeah.
Yeah. You can put on your bag a little mark and say, once you've eaten down to here, it's time to turn around because you're at the halfway point.
Absolutely. You're going to run out of sustenance if you keep going. Yeah. Oh, that's great. Yeah. I mean, we get a lot of people because we're right on the CNO Canal Trail, which is, I think, it's a little over 200 miles of bike trail. And so we get a lot of bikers coming in too. A lot of people who need carbs. So we're really well situated for carb eaters. Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. Yeah. And they got to love you for sure. I guess, and I'm always curious because you mentioned it earlier about getting your start in the house and then making the transition, you know, to one space now to this space and, mm-hmm. and sort of the customers and the community kind of coming along for the ride. I'm curious as to what that's been like for you and the kind of support that you're getting from folks in Harper's Ferry slash Bolivar.
That's a really great question. At every kind of step, I have questioned whether people will continue to support, like, because we were bringing it directly to their homes because everything was in lockdown. And so we were doing deliveries and so people were accustomed to placing their order and then just getting it delivered. And so when we opened the store, we kind of made it a point to stop deliveries and kind of try and welcome people in to get people into Harper's Ferry, get people in the door. There's something I feel like that's really magical about like walking into a bakery and you're seeing all the steam from the oven and it smells really good. And we just pulled cinnamon buns out and the whole town smells amazing. And it's like, we wanted to give people that experience. And I didn't know if people would, if it wasn't delivered to them, if they would come, and they have, and in spades. So so many people who were my regulars, like you said, like the old regulars, and now we have the new regulars, we've had that exact same experience where people have stuck with us and they just kind of follow along. And when we go on vacation, they miss us. And when we come back, you know, they're happy to come back in. I've really been blown away by it, by the support. Cause it's been a really, I'm somebody who doesn't really like come to decisions easily. My husband would definitely agree. So I kind of chronically overthink everything. And before I make a big decision like that, and I feel like I did, and we kind of took the jump and it worked out and it has continued to work out. And I feel like if I had to make the choice between, you know, like going into business myself and opening this bakery or continuing working for someone else, I probably would have just done the safe thing, but I wasn't doing anything with my time in COVID. So I was like, well, I have nothing to lose, so I might as well just try it. And it has worked out. So I'm just so thankful for the support of people. You know, I was saying, like, we're not a sit down place. We're not, you know, like a place where you can come hang out for a couple of hours. And so I was worried, you know, that it maybe wouldn't be a neighborhood spot, but it has, it's all worked out.
There's a lot of folks that are sort of, no matter what they're doing in previous jobs, sort of harboring this dream, you know, I'm going to open up my own place or whatever. And it sounds like with you, it was like, well, I need to do something.
I've tried not to take it too seriously this whole time. I've tried to avoid taking it too seriously because if I do, I'll get in my head about it. And then, I'll find a way to screw it up. So we just kind of take it day by day and have fun with it. And I think that.
But that's so powerful. Like that's so smart, because then you don't get into like a comparison trap or I'm building to some other vision or whatever. It's just like, I'm here. I've got this. We're making these things.
We got these orders to do. Let's make these orders and then we'll figure out what we're going to do tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and that's not usually the way that I operate. I'm kind of like a compulsive planner. So it's been an uncomfortable place for me, but it's also been a place that I've really been enjoying being a part of, new way of life. I do kind of feel there are so many brave people out there that have made the choice to, you know, leave a well-paying job and go into business and, you know, like launch their business. And I have so much respect for that. And, you know, for me, I just kind of like didn't have anything else to do. So I did it.
Yeah.
So there is kind of like that imposter thing there, but at the same time, it's been an incredibly welcoming community, and there's so many great small bakers out there doing exactly the same thing that are, you know, some of them stay small by design because they want to stay home, and then, you know, others want to keep growing and are, you know, taking their opportunities as they get it. So everyone's kind of got a different story.
Yes, absolutely. And I think everybody's got the imposter as well, but it's always in a different spot. Right.
Yeah.
So I hear your story and I'm like, oh, well, of course it was going to work for Katie because she had all this experience working in other kitchens. And so she knew kind of how to work with cooks and stuff. And I never had any of that. And it scared the heck out of me. Right.
Yeah.
You know, and yet for me, talking to customers, telling them the story, bringing them along, that kind of thing, mm-hmm. that seemed easier. I don't know. I'm not going to say easy, but certainly easier than this idea of, oh, we need to hire some bakers. Like that's still the thing that was just like, you know, the fact that we hired two really amazing people in our first year, just by fluke, like, yeah. It's like, I still, you know, and then did everything
yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. And did everything in our power to make it so as that they would quit. Like, it was just, you know, like we were just terrible to these first couple of folks, not on purpose, just by stress and that, you know, and it's like, and they're both wildly successful in spite of it. And, you know, and they're amazing folks, but so the imposter was huge in me, but the more people I talked to, I realized I had a very specific one. Yeah. Everyone has a very specific thing.
I couldn't possibly
do this, you know? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone's got a reason why, you know, why it wouldn't work out, but sometimes it just works out. Like no matter how much you plan or how much you don't plan, just show up and do the work every day. And it will keep working out, you hope.
Absolutely. You know, and just the bringing your regulars along for the ride is the best thing.
Yeah.
Not in like a martyr way, like not in a, oh, look how hard I'm working. But, you know, when you were talking about your regulars, I was thinking back to mine. And the thing that always got me is if there was a lineup on Saturday, mm-hmm. you kind of overhear people talking in the line. And the best thing was, when, you know, a regular customer is talking to somebody that's in for the first time and telling them, well, you should get this and you should get that, you know,
I love when that happens.
Yeah. And you just realize, oh, this is our the big our place, right?
Yeah, it's not yours anymore. It belongs to a larger community, and it's kind of built on their support. And yeah, I mean, like, I think about that a lot. Because like this whole bakery was basically built out of loaves of bread that people have bought.
Yeah.
Turned into money, turned into a bakery. So it's like all this bakery belongs to everyone because you've all been a part of it from day one. Yeah, that's just, it's a crazy thing. But I do love those interactions when you hear them. Like, you know, if somebody's like, I don't know if I should get a cinnamon bun, and someone's like, you should get a cinnamon bun.
Yeah. Yeah. That was hot cross buns at Easter time when
I love those. Yeah.
We were first making them, and you'd get you'd overhear the, I don't really like hot cross buns, and then somebody would turn and say, No.
This is different.
And they're like, well, I'll get one. And then they'd go out to the, you'd see them eat it outside their car and come back in and buy six, right?
I love to see that. Yeah.
and that's not bragging on my on our hot cross buns. It's that recognition that something that I used to think of as from the supermarket and cheap and, you know, $1.99 a dozen.
Yeah.
And who's this guy charging $1.25 for a hot, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah. And then they realize, oh, that's why. Because it's real.
Changing minds out there, you know, you got to win them over. But once you do, you've got them, because, yeah, but you do have to change some people's perceptions about things.
And when you get your fans doing it with you,
yeah,
then it's a lot of fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Sure. So cool. Well, I don't want to hold you too long because you got an early morning, but what else? What did we miss? What were you hoping we were going to talk about?
I don't know. I mean, I've just had such a great time chatting with you.
Oh, yeah. No, very much.
We have a lot of the same experiences. And I feel like, I don't know, I've listened to a couple of your podcast, just kind of trying to see what you would ask. Trying to find people with similar stories to my own. And we listened to one this morning from when you did a rehash of the one you did with August 1st. Up in Vermont. And we listened to that this morning when we were doing the morning bake. And I was just like, it doesn't matter like how big or how small a place is. You can find stuff you relate to with every baker.
Totally.
And I feel like that's really cool. And I just thank you for like bringing these stories to light. Because I feel like everyone's kind of got this journey, and mine has been a very weird and strange journey. But you know, everybody kind of has their own, and it's just a really cool thing to hear. So
well, and I totally love the fact that it's like use August 1st as the example. We could walk in there, and then we could come down to your place, mm-hmm. and they would be completely different, and yet yet I guarantee you we'd feel comfortable in both.
Exactly. Yeah.
And if I ever can grab onto exactly why that is, then I guess I can't do any more shows. So I'm not going to go too close, but,
no,
but that's the thing. It's like all the folks that I talk to, and it doesn't matter if it's like a high end catering place or like literal cottage baker still working with Dutch ovens and stuff.
Yeah.
It's like, there's a comfort that folks like us kind of
like, these are my people. Yeah.
Yeah. And so until we can come down and hang out at your test kitchen when it's built and we're allowed to gather and all of that stuff, I guess we just have the podcast, but one day we'll get a bunch of folks together and John who put me on to you and stuff. And we'll come down. We'll have a big shindig at your place. But
yeah, he got his Rothko finally.
Did he? Oh
yeah, he did. He's been waiting for so long.
Yeah.
And just delay after delay. And I got the batch before his, and then his came. And I was just like, oh God, I can't wait till you get it. It's going to change your life.
Yeah.
He's wonderful. John from Hemlock Bread. I don't know.
Yeah.
But anyways, going back to what you were saying about like feeling comfortable in a place like that, like just kind of one review that we got, somebody said that walking into our bakery felt like a warm hug. And that was like, that is exactly what I want you to feel when you come in. And I feel like so many bakers are like that. We want you to immediately feel like welcomed, like this is your home, you know, come in, get some hot bread, like enjoy everything. Like we just welcome you in. And so like, and I feel like a lot of bakers are like that. And we felt like that when we went to August 1st, we went there last year.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why I listened to that one. Cause I was like, oh, I know these people. I've been here. Yeah.
Oh, that's so great.
And like everything that you were saying was like, it was great. Like down to like them not having Wi-Fi, like that was like the coolest thing. I love it. Because people talk to each other and you know, it's not just staring at a screen. So
yeah. So cool.
More of that.
Awesome. A warm hug. I wrote that down. This is going to be the warm hug episode for sure. Yeah,
I love it.
Cause beautiful. Well, thanks a lot, Katie. I appreciate this.
It's been really lovely talking with you. And thank you.
Right on. Wow. Fun, hey? What a great talk. I'm so grateful to Katie for taking the time to come on the show and chat. Yet another example of, you know, just lives being turned upside down because of COVID back in 2020, and then resilient bakers saying, whoa, hold on here. I got to do something. I'll figure this out. And 2 years later, you're in a better spot maybe than you were had COVID not happened. You know, like this Bolivar Breads wouldn't have existed if it weren't for COVID throwing a wrench into Katie's plans. And I know there's a lot of folks in Bolivar and Harper's Ferry and folks just passing through that are very grateful that Bolivar Breads exists and that Katie's, you know, making the good stuff. And so really grateful to talk to her. I mentioned it in our conversation. I have huge respect for folks that are so into this craft that they're going to get started swapping around Dutch ovens in home ovens, you know, in and out, spin, that kind of thing, to bake enough bread to sell to folks. That is so much work. And so big props to Katie for getting started that way and to slowly growing a little bit bigger, a little bit bigger to maybe where she's right where she wants to be right now. I hope you enjoyed the show this week. I had a great time bringing it to you. I really did. Until next week, when we have another talk with another really awesome baker, let's have a good week, okay? Get outside if you can. Enjoy some sunshine. And then get back in there. Bake lots. Work hard. Stay safe. Stay healthy. Happy baking. Bye-bye.